All right, we're ready? Okay, everything's set? Okay, Jim, remember your three S's. Star, smile, strong. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim Toronto's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted here at WGNplus.com. And don't forget my landing page. You go to the prompt, entertainment section, and you'll see Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And you will see all 113 episodes listed there, because this is episode 114. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate your time and your effort on a weekly basis, or maybe you binge. I am binge-worthy. I have designated myself as binge-worthy. So hopefully you can binge on 114 episodes of the podcast here. I want to talk about a couple of things this week that have been on my mind. First of all, the first one is, wow, did you watch the World Cup soccer, which around the world is perhaps, and I don't even think it's perhaps, it is the biggest sporting event around the world. Over a billion people, from what I read, over a billion people watched the World Cup. That's a lot of people. That's 10 times as many that watched the Super Bowl, to give you a sense of that. And I don't know about you, though, but I completely missed it. Am I the only one? There's 7 billion people in the world. So obviously, 6 billion of us did not watch it. But when you say 1/7 of the world watched an event, I'd say that's pretty good. If you had a billion hits or likes on your Instagram account or your YouTube account, I think you'd be you'd probably have more money than Jeff Bezos, okay? I don't know. Soccer or football, as it's known around the world, except here in the United States, has just gone over my head. One of the many things, apparently, in today's culture. But I don't know. All of a sudden, I was hearing World Cup, World Cup, World Cup, and I thought to myself, "Geez, didn't we just have one of these?" Well, yes, we did. Apparently, we had one like 4 years ago. And it's for those of you like me that are kind of oblivious to this. It's a four-year event. It takes many qualifying rounds, countries around the world. This year it was in Russia. It's in a different location every World Cup, similar to the Olympics. Many countries, are participating. It is a huge, huge deal, clearly. This year, France versus Croatia, which was an interesting final when you consider France, one of the oldest countries in the world, Croatia, a very small country. Apparently, England was beating Croatia. A lot going on. When you walked into restaurants or into bars, you noticed that everybody was watching this, except me. I saw it on the news. I saw updates on the news. I saw that on several stations, I clicked around, it was on. As I said, if you went to public places, people seemed to be into it. As I walked around the streets, I did see a few people wearing jerseys I understand at places of business, you know, there was requests, can we have, in like in the community spaces, can we have the World Cup on? I was really surprised to see how many people were into this, but it got me to thinking, as most things do, and if you listen with any regularity, you know that, it's kind of my job, at least myself, myself appointed job to look at everything and weigh the pros and cons and come up with some kind of an opinion on this. And so the World Cup is certainly something that, as I said, was a huge deal. But I'm wondering, how huge of a deal was it really? Was it really a huge deal here in the United States? Or is it, as so many things are today, has the World Cup now become a status symbol? When I'm on Facebook, and you click through my... Yes, I am on Facebook. I know I have a flip phone. Yes, I understand. But at the same time, I am not completely technology ignorant or anti-technology. I am not, as I've said many times. And I'm on Facebook. You know, that's where this... I post this podcast on my Facebook page every Monday after it's on WGNplus.com. But so as I click through my news feed, I see several people, many of the people, my friends, and yes, out of the, I don't know, 1,900 friends I have on Facebook, and I don't know if that's a big number or not. I really don't know. I'm not falsifying it or trying to inflate my numbers. It is what it is. Most people that that request a friend, I will usually confirm that request, especially if it's somebody where I have mutual friends. I don't know about you, but I get a lot of young women who seem to be offering pornographic services on Facebook. They all want to be my friend. Those I don't confirm for many reasons. But usually if I have a mutual friend, I will automatically confirm them, whether I know them or not. At least I look to see who the mutual friends are and I confirm them. If they're not, and I apologize if you have, if you've gone on my Facebook page and tried to confirm a friend and I haven't confirmed you, it may be because we don't have any mutual friends in common. That's kind of what I use as a barometer. If I don't know somebody, I'm a little skeptical of just blanketly accepting their friendship, and so I usually just use mutual friends as my criteria. But anyway, I'm on Facebook, is my point. And so I'm on my newsfeed, and I will see several people on that newsfeed, and yes, several people that I actually know, not just through mutual Facebook friends, but people that I actually know, and they will be talking about soccer, not just now, recently, while the World Cup was going on, but throughout the year. Hey, Arsenal is playing Manchester, Liverpool, and all of Real Madrid. And yeah, I know I'm a sports fan. I know peripherally about soccer, football, if you will, who the main teams are, some of the main players are. Obviously, the bigger ones have become pop stars like Beckham and things like that, pop culture stars. But I will admit, I am not into soccer. I will not sit on a Sunday or a Saturday or any day and watch a soccer game. I that's just not in my sports purview. And it's funny because as I'm watching this, I mean, the crowds, there were watching parties, and especially for the finals. And obviously, you know, where football is really, it's interesting. Here in the United States, our allegiances go to your state or your city, because we are a country of, obviously, 50 states. And yet, what's so interesting about soccer is that it is obviously identified, your allegiance is by your country. Or many times by your local club, but many times it is by your country, especially for the World Cup. Now, and once again, my introduction to soccer, somehow in my life, all roads lead to Elton John. Isn't that strange? I learned about football in the 70s, in the early 70s, and I learned that it was football and soccer, the two, even the names designations, because Elton John was a big fan of his, a soccer fan in general, as most people in England are. And in the early 70s, we kept hearing about this team called Watford, W-A-T-O, or W-A-T-F-O-R-D. And in fact, some early videos of his from the 70s, he's got his Watford little medal, and he's always wearing Watford paraphernalia in pictures. And so reading about him in those early days, I learned that he was a big soccer fan. And this was his local team. The Watford Hornets was the team from his local town. And that's where I really began to learn about it. And then soccer became more of, they were trying to bring soccer to the United States. It was this huge sport around the world. And they were trying to bring it to the United States. And if you remember, there was a soccer team throughout the United States early in the 70s in most major cities. Here in Chicago, we had the Chicago Sting. And in fact, one year, the Chicago Sting won the championship. And I remember one of their biggest players was Karl-Heinz Granitza. Karl-Heinz Granitza. That was one name that you heard. And I still remember that name. I can still rattle it off. Karl-Heinz Granitza was the big player on the Chicago Sting. And one year they won the championship. And in the 70s, that was a big deal. Because in the 70s, most Chicago teams were horrible. Especially around the time the Sting won. It was kind of a big deal, but it kind of wasn't. Because Chicago fans were so hungry for any kind of a championship that you would see some Sting t-shirts, and I think they played at Soldier Field, and there was a very small group of people that watched it, but we were the champions. The Cubs were horrible in the 70s. The Sox were horrible in the 70s. The Bears were horrible in the 70s. And the Blackhawks were horrible in the mid to late 70s. So here were the Sting. We at least, and first, of course, they don't exist anymore, but they did win a championship. And funny thing about Elton John, when I mentioned that, in 1976, at the concert I went to, he even was wearing a Chicago Sting t-shirt because he was a soccer fan. So I first heard about, as a young kid, soccer and football, as it's called, because of the Watford Hornets. As ironically, as years went on, about 10, 15 years ago, I actually visited Watford and saw an Elton John concert at the stadium where they play. And Elton John became the president of the team and actually took them to a championship in the early 80s. And he's still the honorary, CEO or something of the team. And he has invested a lot of money and has done a lot of charity concerts for the team, which has helped them in quite a deal. He has certainly raised their profile and their ability. It's a small town, and for a team from such a small town to have been able to rise certainly is due to a lot of his input, especially monetarily, to afford contracts. But anyway, So soccer came here then, and then, of course, the great Pele, who was perhaps at that time the greatest soccer player of all time. They brought Pele over from Europe to play here in the United States to bring some attention. I remember I used to get a subscription to Sports Illustrated. I remember the Pele cover, and they were trying to push soccer a lot. And then it sort of faded out throughout the 80s, and then it came back in the 90s. And as we know, it has been now a staple for children and leagues around the country. There was indoor soccer. There certainly is a professional soccer league here in Chicago now. It's the Chicago Fire. There were so many big predictions, especially 20 years ago, of how soccer would ultimately become the number one sport in the United States. or certainly become much more popular, excuse me, than it was once the younger kids of today, back then in the 90s, who grew up playing, would now want to follow it. Now, that has happened to some extent, but certainly, you know, the soccer league here in the United States is not as big as football. It's not as big as baseball. It's not as big as basketball. It's not as big as hockey. It has certainly grown, and it is growing, but I don't think it is exactly where people thought it would be, say, 20 years on now. But then I watch this World Soccer, and I'm seeing the crowds here in the United States of people watching it and going to viewing parties and wearing the paraphernalia, and they're saying, okay, well, wait a minute. And, you know, on television, it is on network TV, you know, and of course on cable, you can buy these soccer packages. And when you go into a sports store, you will see the soccer jerseys of some of the more popular international teams, as I said, Manchester, Celtic, United. In fact, I went to Rod Stewart concert. I think I told you I went to a Rod Stewart concert last month at the Hollywood Bowl, and Rod Stewart is a huge, huge soccer fan and has played soccer. And still at age 73, one of his shticks is he still kicks soccer balls into the arena. And for 73, he was still kicking them pretty good. And there were several people in the stands wearing the Celtic United jersey. And if you remember in You're In My Heart, that song of his, he even says the line, he references his favorite team by saying, "You're Celtic United. Baby, I've decided you're the best team I've ever seen. You're Celtic United." That was his favorite soccer team and still is. And so there's several people wearing the Celtic United jersey in the crowd, and they had the flag. So, yes, there are more people who are aware of it and following soccer. There's no question. It hasn't risen to the height I think most people thought it would by this time. At the same time, we are seeing concussions, especially and the awareness of concussions and the severity of concussions, and we are now beginning to really see and pay attention to the careers and the after careers and the life quality of professional football players. Especially now, we are seeing a lot more dementia and a lot more Alzheimer's and a lot more brain injuries. And, you know, that used to just say, oh, you know, and boxers, we saw what happened to Muhammad Ali. Oh, the term used to be punch drunk. He's punch drunk. And they just, well, that's the way it is. You know, that was kind of the way our society looked at things. Hey, that's a byproduct of being a boxer. You know, that's what happens. Now, today, we are certainly a lot more concerned about the quality of people's lives after they play these sports. And most sports people will tell you that they know the risks going in, and they still love the game. And of course, there's a lot of money to be made in sports too. So a lot of people know those risks and still play. But we are seeing a lot of people, especially from the 80s. We're now seeing a lot of people that played in the 80s, especially football players, who are now in their 50s, and they are suffering from the effects of being hit in the head on a regular basis for 10 or 12 years. It's clearly an issue that is taking on more and more severity. There are some now football leagues that are for little kids that are fading away. Parents are not allowing their kids to play in at least before high school. And there is a question of, can football survive? American football. And is soccer, you know, prepared to take that over? I don't have any children. It never came up to me, but I would have to say that at this point, with all the studies and the information that we have, it's clear that it's a dangerous sport. And yes, as much as the leagues and the companies have tried to create as much safety equipment as possible, hockey as well, and certainly football, every play, every 45 seconds, there is major contact being made, and your head and your body is being subjected to hits. I played a little football in high school, only 2 years. I got hurt on my knee, and it wasn't serious, but it was serious enough that baseball was my sport, and I was a catcher, and so I had to bend a lot, so I decided not to play football anymore for fear that I would get hurt. So I did not really play, and I did not really play organized football as a young kid. I played only in high school, so I'm fairly feeling fairly confident that I won't be feeling any repercussions. But I remember getting clocked. I certainly remember getting clocked. I remember seeing stars a few times. And so, yes, you certainly can get hurt in soccer. And while it's not a contact sport like football, there's certainly injuries. But any kind of sport, there's going to be some kind of injuries. But football certainly is built on hitting. I mean, that's what you do. You hit with your head. I don't care how you try about technique. When you're when you're chasing at a guy, you're hitting somebody, your head is there. It's instinctual. So clearly, football on the long term, there may be a time when we do not have football. I don't know if it's going to be soon or not, but clearly, when you see the attendance and the popularity of the World Cup championship tournament, you certainly realize around the world this is a big deal. We are trying to send football across, into Europe. There's several games, and they try that with baseball as well. And hockey is obviously around the world as well. But soccer is that one sport that is really interesting that America has embraced it, yes, more, but not as much as you'd think, at least at this point. But my question is, you knew there'd be a question here, right? How much of the World Cup mania here in the United States, how much of it was legitimate fans really into it because that is their sport and this is the epitome of soccer around the world, the World Cup? It is their Olympics. It is their Super Bowl. But I'm wondering here in the United States, how much was it real fandom? And in today's world, as we know, it is important to be into cool things and to show other people that you are into it, especially on your Facebook and on your YouTube and on your Instagram and on your Snapchat and whatever else you use. It is important to be into cool things. And World Cup soccer is one of those things that really fits that criteria of being cool because it isn't widespread. It's big enough around the world, and it's big enough where you could it's like a big cult, if that's possible, if that's not a contradictory statement. It's a big cult, at least here in the United States. It's not mass yet. But it certainly is cool. If you see somebody wearing a soccer jersey, they're trying to tell you something. Hey, I'm into this. Notice me. There is that aspect to it. So as I was watching the people here in the United States watching it, you know, all these bars, it was always on. There were communal televisions in hotels. Or, as I said, in bars or in restaurants, the World Cup was always on. Now, was that fashionable? Or was the hotel, for instance, trying to be cool? Was the bar trying to be cool? Was the restaurant trying to be cool? Hey, we got to put the World Cup on. Heck with the Cubs. You know, heck with the Sox. We got to put World Cup on because that really shows how cutting edge and cool we are. And if you're sitting in the bar watching it, would you rather be watching the Cubs or the Sox game? But do you watch the soccer game because it's the cool thing to watch right now and you don't want to seem that you're not in with the cool crowd? And then when your friends are saying, hey, we're going to go to some big watching party at some bar or at some big venue, hey, we are a bandwagon society these days, folks, because it's cool. Look at me. You know, look at where I'm at. Lollapalooza these days is less about the music and more about the event. And so that's what I'm wondering. In the United States, there is certainly a popular a group that where soccer is popular. But is there the cool aspect of it? As I said, I see a lot of these people on my Facebook page and, oh, getting up early to watch Arsenal versus Manchester. I mean, are you doing that because it's cool? Or are you really a fan? Now, as I said, I didn't have kids. I would assume that for a lot of people, they got into soccer on a larger stage, on international stage, to start to follow the game, not only with the professional league, but also with the international competitions. Because if your kid played soccer, which has become the thing for kids to do now, you know, your kid, once again, wants to do what all his friends or his or her friends are doing. So they play soccer. And so now there's all these soccer leagues. Yes, we see them everywhere. So I would assume that if you're a parent, mom or a dad, if your child is playing soccer, then you start to get into it. And you say, okay, let me see how it's really played. I mean, I'm seeing 5 and 6 and 7, 8 and 10-year-old kids play it, but let me see how it's really played. So now you start to, all of a sudden, if you're watching soccer on a weekly basis, watching your kid play, and you're starting to get the nuances of the game, it only makes sense that you would naturally begin to graze over and move over and say, let's see the way the professionals do it and get into it. I understand that. I don't think that's the cool factor. I think that's legitimate. If you came to soccer through your kids, I think that makes sense. If you came to soccer because you played it as a young kid, and now you're watching the World Cup, I think that makes sense. But when I see so many people at, you know, watching these events, and especially at some of these watching parties, you know, and some of these bars, I have to wonder how much bandwagon, how much cool factor is involved. You know, as I said, I was completely oblivious to it. I did go back and forth. On the final, when France played Croatia, I was watching television that day, and I did turn it on. But I did not watch the entire match from beginning to end. And that was actually a pretty good match. There was actually a lot of goals scored, which was surprising. But so far, I mean, you know, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, we always hear about soccer not catching on initially in America, United States. We love action. In baseball, we love home runs. In hockey, we love goals. In football, we love touchdowns. And in basketball, we love dunks and three-pointers. We love action. And soccer is a game of nuance. Soccer is a game of, a lot of groans of, here he comes, and then, you know, the field is so big, and a lot of times you have tie scores or 1-0 games, and that's why indoor soccer came about, because they figured, well, people need goals. We need to have a smaller field and a chance for more goals to score. But that really, it's around, but it never really caught on, because it was kind of a bastardization of the real sport. You either like the real sport or you don't. But based on the worldwide, there's no question, worldwide, you know, soccer is the number one sport of the world. You know, pure and simple, no question about it. Now, the United States, obviously, because of our place in the world and our influence on the world, you know, our sports and what we do here does travel around the world and people do pick it up. And as I said, we've tried to export baseball and we've tried to export football around the country, around the world, I mean. And obviously, you know, hockey is played around the world and basketball is played around the world. But all of those sports combined do not even approach the popularity and the passion that soccer does around the world. But I'm looking at it here in the United States because now, once again, okay, and here's my point. So now the World Cup is over. Am I going to see now the Saturday afternoon soccer game on a television as opposed to a Cub or a Sox game in the bar? I don't know. Am I going to see as many people wearing jerseys of their country or of their favorite professional soccer team here in the United States? I don't know. I mean, there's Toyota Field in Bridgeview here in Chicago for the Chicago Fire. They show the highlights on the sports news, but I don't know if that's a full house every week. So I'm wondering, is this a four-year event? Do Americans get into soccer every 4 years? Or does that translate into new fans that continue to breed the sport? Obviously, over the last 20 years, a lot of young kids have been growing up and playing soccer. But I'm not sure how much that's translating into it becoming the number one sport in this country. Now, as I said, if football and the severity of the injuries and the concern about that continues, football could have the danger of declining. Its overall ratings are declining. It, you know, the Super Bowl is still popular, but attendance is down, viewership is down. As I said, youth leagues are down. None of this stuff happens overnight. It does happen gradually, and we are seeing more and more medical proof and medical studies going on about the serious ramifications of playing football. Professional football, especially, because now you've got 300-pound guys. That's and people say, well, why is it all of a sudden the last, you know, 20 years are we worried about it? Well, as I said, there was always this idea of, you know, the guy's punch drunk or he's taken a few hits. But now in football especially, and even in hockey, the game is faster. People are stronger, and they're skating faster, and they're stronger, and they're hitting harder. In football, if you remember, back in 1985, William the Refrigerator Perry was considered a big player at 300 pounds. Now, that's barely a fullback. I mean, he's not a big, that would not be considered a big player anymore. But back then, he was this anomaly. So the players are bigger, the players are stronger, and they're hitting each other harder. So football may be in trouble. Not now, not in the next 5 or 10 years, but I wouldn't be surprised next 20 or 25 years if we see some major changes happening to football and even the popularity of it. And maybe soccer fills that void. Based on the World Cup, there's certainly an interest, at least every 4 years. And I wouldn't be surprised. Now we're seeing people actually going to arenas and watching people play video games in an arena of 15,000 people. No contact sports there at all. Your brain's in good shape there, I think. It's actually probably being fed because you're actually using it to think a little. So it's actually not being hurt. It's actually maybe in some small way being helped in the long term. There might come a point in 100 years from now where there are no real sports. They're all virtual sports. Who knows? But I'm just wondering, were you into soccer? Did you watch the World Cup? Was it that big of a deal to you? Were you biting your nails? Were you rooting for your nationality or your country? Who were you rooting for? The United States wasn't in it. That's the other thing that got me crazy. I couldn't understand why people were into it here in the United States. I mean, yes, we are a country of immigrants. So, yes, there are people from different countries here. But the United States team didn't even get into the tournament, which is another aspect of this. In the last 20 to 25 years, we've had a lot of kids playing soccer in all these leagues. You'd think that by now we would be able to field one of the best teams in the world. We are the United States. We have the resources, right? And yet our team did not even qualify for the World Cup, which once again gets back to my original thesis. How popular is soccer? We're obviously not that good at it yet. We can't even get into the World Cup tournament. Croatia was in the finals. United States didn't even make it. Croatia. We're a little bigger and a little more powerful than Croatia. So I'm just wondering, how real is this soccer mania? Is it just a every 4 year soccer mania? Is it to be a cool hipster soccer mania? I understand there's a group of people that really love soccer, and I more power to you. That's fantastic. But I'm wondering if it was the big deal, really, that everybody was making it. Because here it is a couple weeks later, and I don't really hear a lot about soccer anymore. I'm sure we'll hear about it again in 2022. But is it that big of a deal? I don't know. Maybe in another 4 years, soccer will have continued a little more. But and maybe hopefully the USA will get in, will we actually be in the tournament, which will actually heighten its awareness here. But like I said, I saw a lot of World Cup mania happening around the country and here in Chicago, major city. But I'm just wondering, is it World Cup or is it World Cool? Speaking of cool, there was some news that broke a few weeks ago that really shocked me, and I think a lot of music fans. And thankfully, it wasn't dire news, but it was certainly shocking news, and it was concerning news. And I definitely want to address it because this performer and this songwriter is one of my favorites, and it was a shock to hear. And as I've said many times, we are seeing that more and more, you know, the rock and roll era definitely has an expiration date. And I've used that phrase several times. We've seen many greats of the rock era beginning to pass away as they reach their 60s and 70s and they're approaching their 80s, especially from the 60s. And obviously some of the early pioneers are in their 80s. And we've seen some of them go away, you know, self-induced. And we've seen other ones, sadly, go by the way of disease. So, yeah, the rock, I mean, I think Ringo is 78. The Beatles are getting, the surviving Beatles are getting close to 80. But this one was a shocker. No one expected this, no one heard this. But the songwriter and the performer, Elvis Costello, announced that he is battling cancer. And he didn't go into what kind of cancer, but apparently he had cancer surgery, and he is recovering to the point where he had to cancel a European summer tour. He had the surgery apparently, and he was recovering, and he went back on tour, and he just physically was not able to keep up the rigors of touring. That is not an easy life. And so he had to cancel these tours, and he did come out and announce that at least for the time being, he was going to take some time off to recover. Now, it's interesting. He is due to play here in Chicago at the Riot Fest in September. That hasn't been canceled, so we'll see how his health is doing. But it was a shock to hear that, once again, I think he's 64, 65 years old, and that he's got some type of serious cancer. It was an aggressive cancer, but apparently it sounds as if they were able to get it. But it just was another shock, and especially for me. Like I said, I've been a fan of Elvis Costello's ever since I first heard his first songs in the late 70s from his My Aim Is True album. He was sold as one of the stars of the punk era, and he looked the part, the ultimate nerd, with the big black horn-rimmed Buddy Holly glasses and the kind of rebellious attitude, the almost F-U attitude to take one of the more sacred names in rock and roll, Elvis. There was only one Elvis. But to Elvis Costello's credit, he took that name. And most people thought it was a reverent name. Nobody else was Elvis. And he took that name, and through his career, he also made it his own. And that's a testament to his talent and his ability as a songwriter and a performer, because it may have been a gimmick. Because once again, don't forget, punk rock was the ultimate rebellion against established rock and roll. It was anti-establishment music. It was anti-establishment politics. And so it was a very keen idea. In fact, it wasn't even his idea. It was his manager at the time. Elvis Costello's real name is Declan McManus. Declan Patrick McManus. He took the name Elvis Costello. And yeah, at the beginning, it may have been a pretty cool marketing tool, but he lived up to that name and made it his own. And so I would say that's a pretty good accomplishment right off the bat, the ability to do that. But he announced, as I said, his cancer, and it was a shocker. I've been a fan of his. As I said, his first album was My Aim Is True, Watching the Detectives, Allison. And he came out as this kind of punker, and that's the way he was initially sold. But as his career has gone on over the last 40 years, he is anything but a punk rocker. In fact, he's probably one of the most talented and diverse performers and songwriters that popular music has had in the last 40 or 50 years. Over his career, Elvis Costello has done rock. He has done country. He has done punk. He has done pop. He has done opera. He has done, Southern gospel. And he's done albums with the Roots and Alan Toussaint from, Creole music. You name it. He has done it all. He has become one of the most, as I said, diverse performers that we have had. He's worked and written songs with some of the greatest performers and songwriters like Paul McCartney and Burt Bacharach. As I said, Alan Toussaint, he's done an album with the Roots. He's worked with people in opera in the Baroque era. He's worked with some of the best country artists. I saw him on tour with Emmylou Harris. And, so he's been all over the board. But he's one of these guys, it's almost like I talked earlier about soccer. He's like one of the biggest cult acts in the world, if that's possible. A mainstream cult artist. Many people, I fear, have heard of Elvis Costello, but haven't really heard a lot of his music. And once again, you hate to always, when somebody gets sick or somebody dies, and all of a sudden everybody flocks to their music. But, here is some news that was kind of sent a shockwave, because he is one of the most prolific songwriters in the last 30 or 40 years. And so the hope is that he survives this and beats this cancer. But more than that, it might be an opportunity, and that's why I'm talking about it now, is for people to discover his music. If you're a rock fan and you don't have an Elvis Costello album or several in your album collection, your CD collection, or your on your playlist or on your Spotify or on your whatever it may be, I would urge you to discover and do some research into the music of Elvis Costello. Because, as I said, it's not one genre. You will find how he has effortlessly touched so many different genres. And one of the prolific songwriters, many of his albums, in fact, one of his albums called Get Happy from 1980, had more than 20 songs on it. There were 2 or 3 minute songs. Lyrically, he's one of the most clever and insightful and just genius lyricists. In fact, that's one reason why he worked with Paul McCartney in the late 80s. Paul was going through a kind of a time of being lost in his sound. And because Elvis Costello was one of the more respected songwriters of the day, Paul McCartney's management decided to say to Paul, you know, he's very kind of, you know, he's got that edge and he's got that creativity and he's got that unique way to come up with a rhyme and come up with an attitude. I mean, he was always the angry young man, was Elvis Costello. That was kind of the way he was sold at the beginning. And he was kind of angry. He did have that punk attitude, even though his music didn't always reflect the punk attitude, and certainly hasn't over the last several years. But he's still a rebel. There's no question about that. His music is not, you know, can't be categorized. And in that way alone, he's a rebel. But that's why, you know, Paul McCartney's management urged him to work with Elvis, and they made an album together. The Paul McCartney album is called Flowers in the Dirt. You may have heard the one Paul McCartney song called My Brave Face. That was the single that was released of a McCartney. And at the time, in working with Paul McCartney, he was not Elvis Costello. Then he was Declan McManus. But as I said, he worked with Paul with Burt Bacharach and totally wrote lyrics for Bacharach's arrangements. His father was a singer in England in the 40s and in 50s and 60s. Never of great note. He had a few little moments. In fact, he's got an autobiography out that came out a couple of years ago that you can certainly learn a lot about Elvis Costello, and it's almost a homage to his father and the influence his father had on him in terms of being a musician and a songwriter. But he really is a unique songwriter, as I said, lyrically. I mean, here, for instance, just to give you a thing. So there's this album from 1985, I believe, called King of America, which is one of my favorite albums of his. And one of the lyrics is, she said that she was working with the ABC News. It was as much of the alphabet as she knew how to use. That's what I mean. That's one of my favorite Elvis Costello lyrics of all time. She said that she was working for the ABC News. It was as much as the alphabet as she knew how to use. What a great line. And so I would urge you, if you're not aware of Elvis Costello, I mean, those of us who are big fans of his, we're sending our thoughts and our positivity out that he beats this cancer, because he is a special performer and a special songwriter, and we certainly want him around as long as possible. But if you've only heard of him, or maybe you've never heard of him, let me give you a few pointers here, some places to go where you can discover some of his music. And I would start out right with the beginning. His first album is called My Aim Is True, and you may have heard songs like Watching the Detectives, or Allison, or Mystery Dance, or The Angels Are Gonna Wear My Red Shoes. His second album, another great one, called This Year's Model, has a song you probably have heard called Radio Radio, at the very least. His third album, Armed Forces, there's songs on there. Accidents Will Happen. And in fact, there's a great live version which he slows it down. It's a fast song. Oliver's Army, another great song on there. Green Shirt from Armed Forces. Another album, Imperial Bedroom, a song called Man Out of Time. And another song called And in Every Home, and a song called Beyond Belief. These are very diverse songs. You get a real sense of his ability and his style. And his ability, as I said, to jump from genre to genre. In 1984, he put out a much more commercial album called Punch the Clock. Very horn-driven. Great song on there called Every Day I Write the Book. And Let Them Talk. And Shipbuilding, which is a ballad, but it's a very horn-driven, lively album. As I said, King of America was a stripped-down, very acoustic album. You may have heard of T-Bone Burnett, who has gone on to win the Academy Award for his work, and he's worked with some of the more popular people these days. But he and Elvis were together in the late 70s and throughout the 80s, and even collaborated. Not only did Elvis, did T-Bone produce his albums, but they collaborated under a pseudonym called the Coward Brothers. There's a great song called The People's Limousine. Early in his career, great songwriter Nick Lowe. You may have heard Cruel to Be Kind. I Knew the Bride When She Used to Rock and Roll. Nick Lowe wrote What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding, which is on the Armed Forces album, which Elvis has basically recorded the ultimate version of that. But Nick Lowe was an early producer and collaborator with Elvis Costello. So there was certainly a rock and pop element there. So as I said, I said Punch the Clock was in the 80s, King of America. Later, as I said, there's the album that he worked on with Burt Bacharach was called Painted by Memory. A very classy Burt Bacharach sounding, but the Elvis Costello edge to it. His album Spike, which had a few Paul McCartney compositions on it, including the song Veronica, which was about his aging grandmother. That was a sort of a big hit and an MTV hit in the late 80s and the early 90s. And he's, as I said, he's gone on. He continually, records. And he just recently did an album with The Roots. He did an album with Alan Toussaint. New Orleans and Katrina. He is married to the jazz pianist and the jazz great Diana Krall. He is a father of two sons. Most recent, he's got twins, but he also has an older son. So just from a standpoint, you hope he recovers from that. He was married, not only he married Diana Krall several years ago, but he also was married to Kate O'Riordan, who was in the Irish band The Pogues. So the guy gets around. And in fact, go on YouTube. He did an amazing 2-year television show. Not only is he a great writer and a great musician and a great performer, but he is a music historian, which I know he got from his father. He's so knowledgeable about music. He really is a historian. He had a TV show that was on cable called Spectacle, and it was an interview show. And he interviewed some amazing people because he is so well respected in the music world that some of these people like Lou Reed and Bruce Springsteen and Elton John, just the list goes on. Go online and go Google Spectacle. And you can actually buy these on DVD. It was a 2-year show. And he performed. These performers came on. They talked about their music. They talked about writing their songs. They talked about their music in a way that they rarely talk about it. It was really interesting talk about how they made music. Because they respected Elvis Costello so much, they were willing to open up and talk to him about the art and the craft. And it was a great show. It's called Spectacle. I have seen Elvis Costello perform probably more than a couple of dozen times throughout the years. In fact, one of the greatest shows I ever saw, still today, concerts in general, not just great Elvis Costello concerts, but great concerts in general, was at the Riviera Theater. He did a 3-night run at the Riviera. I believe it was in 85. And one of the shows, he had this giant spinning wheel. And it was amazing. On the wheel, just like Wheel of Fortune, he had a list of songs, some of his, some cover versions. And he called people out of the audience. And there, the band was up on the stage. And he called people from the audience. There was a little bar up on the stage. Picked people out of the audience. They got up. They spun the wheel. Whatever song was that came up on the wheel, the band played. And that person who spun the wheel got to sit on stage, have a drink at the little bar, and watch them perform the song. It was just such a cool night. It was, because every show was different. And the wheel was filled with some of his bigger hits, some obscure songs, and some cover versions. But you never knew what was going to happen. And it was such a great idea. And at that time, Wheel of Fortune was so popular. And that's my point about his whole view of things. He's got a great sense of humor. Much of it is dark, but much of it is also fun. And it was one of the great concerts I saw. And as I said, I also saw him perform with an orchestra with Burt Bacharach at the Chicago Theater. And that was another real special event to see those two guys performing their music together with an orchestra, singing and playing. Just very, very memorable. And so if you've never heard of Elvis Costello, I would urge you to go online and begin to listen to his music and download it. If you have heard of him, I would urge you to expand your knowledge of his music. And if you are an Elvis Costello fan like I am, just go back and listen to that music again and again, because hopefully he's going to be around with us for many years, because he really is a special performer. So as I said, if you want he has a greatest hits album, so that might be the best way. But I would urge you to go deeper into his catalog. But start with the beginning. My Aim Is True album. This Year's Model. Armed Forces. Imperial Bedroom. Punch the Clock. Those five right there. And Spike. Those right there certainly will give you, and as I said, Painted from Memory. Those will give you a real good overview of what a gifted, clever, genius songwriter that he is. And we wish him the best as he battles cancer and hopefully has beaten it. And hopefully he will be in the recording studio soon. And so hopefully he'll be back on stage again, because the music world, in the world in general, definitely needs Elvis Costello. And so, with that, I will bid you farewell. Recorded. Hope you enjoyed the show. This is the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen.